Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sidney Wildsmith.
Henry David Thoreau preached that in wildness is the preservation of the world. As we all know, his sermon since has received mixed reviews. But as with all prophets, he speaks truth before it is understood. And his words have echoed within the distant and sacred places, but are now resonating within the minds of those who find their spirits empty in the towering, gleaming age. And they are making their way back amongst the old guard conservators of old family values, alive and well, in the vast open spaces of Idaho, where we're heading to next. Ready? Next week, there's a coalition of wilderness advocates who are heading to the nation's capital to bring awareness about wilderness issues to those people who make some of the biggest decisions, people who designate the wilderness areas. But people are coming from all over the country, and they're talking from their heart, and they're talking representing their friends and their neighbors. And one person who's going to be there is our next guest, Rick Johnson, who is the executive director of the Idaho Conservation League. Rick, welcome to the Wildside News.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, first of all, I just am curious, what is the life like up in Idaho on a day like today?
Well, it's a beautiful day out here today. We have it's cooled down a little bit of autumn in the air, and got a little smoke from some forest fires, but otherwise it is it's a fabulous time to be in Idaho.
I had one of my greatest drives of my life up in Idaho, where as a long time ago now, I was driving a Volkswagen van, and I got too far up into the wilderness and found out that I was going to run out of gas, and I was able to actually coast for 20 miles down a mountainside.
And well, you know, there are a lot of places out here where you get out into the backcountry and you sort of, you know, spend more time looking out the window, stopping, poking around, and I also have had these moments where my gas gauge is not the first thing on my mind.
It is wide open country. And
it is, and
that's really what we're going to be talking about. Now, you're going to be heading off to Washington, D.C. on behalf of your organization. Give us a little sense of what it is you hope to accomplish while you're there.
Well, we've been working for many years in Idaho, and Idaho, it's more important to point out, has more unprotected wild country than any other part of the country outside of Alaska. We have over 10 million acres of wild, unprotected lands. And unfortunately, in this state, we've been unable to pass a wilderness bill in the U.S. Congress for over 26 years. So what we're really trying to do is bring it on home. We're trying to really cap what has been years of work to pass the first bill in a generation. We just recently succeeded in getting a measure to protect the Boulder and White Cloud Mountains of central Idaho, protected as wilderness, and that just passed the U.S. House of Representatives. So we're very excited about that. Now we're looking to a hearing in late September in the U.S. Senate and hopefully getting it over the finish line before the end of the year.
And what's the prognosis for that being accomplished?
All things considered, you know, I think we're doing pretty well. I mean, getting it out of the House, this was the first bill to pass the House for Idaho in 26 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of momentum, and the bill is introduced and supported by a Republican member of our congressional delegation, Representative Mike Simpson, and he is a strong advocate. And frankly, he's our most effective lobbyist at this point as we move to the Senate. But we're bringing in folks from all walks of life in Idaho, you know, elected officials, business leaders, local wilderness activists, to all plug in, and this will occur throughout the month of September, and to be able to bring a little bit of the wild country of Idaho to the less wild hallways of the U.S. Congress.
Very well said. You know, the fact that it's been 26 years since there has been any wilderness designated in Idaho is, I think, part of the story, and it's an interesting story. Part of that being, why is it happening now, and why has it taken 26 years? You know, Idahoans are a rugged bunch, and in many respects, they have a unique form of rugged conservatism, and I think there's a story in that. But I'd like to hear your idea on sort of the backstory on why it's happening now.
Well, I think a real key point of any discussion about wilderness is to remind ourselves that wilderness is protected only one way, and that is by the actively passing a law in the U.S. Congress. Many things can be done by stopping a bad thing, you know, a bad logging project or a bad polluting facility or something like that, and you stop something bad from happening. But to protect wilderness, you have to proactively do something good. And it's very hard to pass a law. And what we've been doing in Idaho for all these years, and it is a very conservative state. We're the most Republican state in the country. But what we have done is, rather than wait around for the politics to get better, which, you know, some of us did for a long time, rather than wait around, what we've done is just acknowledge that Idaho has tough politics and that we're just going to go out and talk to the public and demonstrate that conservation can complement the conservative values of the state when you don't look like you're trying to overthrow them. So what we've been doing is getting folks out before the Rotary Clubs and the county fairs and the business forums and the chambers of commerce and all kinds of forums to be able to create the political inevitability that these places in Idaho are going to be protected. And when you do that, it becomes something that the majority of the public is talking about, the majority of the public supports, and ultimately you create the politics that represent the majority that allows you, even in this very tough time in the U.S. Congress, and this is not an easy time to have proactive environmental laws pass the U.S. Congress, but even so, we can create the majority politics that did get our bill out of the U.S. House and poised for action in the U.S. Senate.
Well, I keep searching for what I feel is a kind of a redefinition of the wilderness constituency, because I think it's changing. The wilderness has been associated with some sort of progressive liberal agenda, but quite honestly, conservation comes from the word conserve, and the birthplace of a lot of the efforts to create wilderness were created by a bunch of conservative old men. And so I think there's, and then unfortunately it became politicized, but I think there's a realignment and reconsideration of what wilderness is, and that it's changing and really bringing together a unique coalition of conservatives and as well progressives. And then I also want to have your thoughts about the extractive industries, because that seems to be where a lot of these issues really start to overlap. Let's first of all talk about how you feel that perhaps wilderness is representing a rugged conservative cause.
Well, I think first and foremost, we go back to protect wilderness, you have to pass a law. And to pass a law, you have to have majority politics. And I think what wilderness advocates have done is step back and, you know, acknowledge that, you know, we have some liabilities as a conservation movement or as an environmental movement, that we have let things get too politicized. We have become too viewed by many as sort of this liberal, elite, upper crust kind of thing. And what you need to do is step back and recognize the kind of values that wilderness protects and the kind of people who care about those values. And what we've found over the years as we go out and talk to people is that many of our most conservative audiences, many of the venues where we're going to speak, where we actually think we're going to have the toughest sell, we have some of the most engaged conversations. Because in many cases, these are the folks that actually go out there on the weekend and, you know, get their feet dirty and walk around and hunt and fish and use these resources. And I think that's been an important learning experience for all of us, that you really can go out and focus on the values that unite people rather than the politics that can divide us. And by focusing on those values, you start creating bridges where you weren't necessarily even looking for them before, but suddenly they become natural allies. Some people view them as non-traditional allies, but at the same time they become pretty obvious because these are the people that care about these outdoor values. And you start uniting that, and you start creating politics that are unexpected and very powerful.
As well, people from the progressive camp, I'm referring to it as progressive or liberal, there has been sort of a concept that it's like, damn business, damn the corporations, what matters is those trees and some sort of strange bird up there. But there is, I think, a change as well coming in a sort of a new pragmatic progressive side that realizes that this concept of our neighborhood and our community and maintaining that is also a critical part of this. Are you seeing a change there as well?
I think things are much more pragmatic than they used to be, and I think that it reflects many different things. One is it reflects the sort of a reaction to the cynicism and the pessimism that many people have about our government processes these days, and that's regardless of political affiliation. People are not upbeat about the U.S. Congress. But at the same time, they do see values that are inherent to the American spirit, particularly here in the American West, of the outdoors and of wildlife and of open space, and they see those values being threatened. The state of Idaho right now is the third fastest growing state in the country. The West is the most urbanized part of the United States right now. Our cities are growing, our rural areas are shrinking, and the values that used to define us of the great outdoors and this open space where you always have plenty of room, it's not quite the same anymore. And what we're seeing is, I think, an increased pragmatism and a sense of optimism, really, that brings people together and says, you know, we've had things that divide our little interest groups, but we love this place, and let's work together and do something about it. And I think that that's really demonstrated here in Idaho, where folks like myself and many other folks associated with Idaho Conservation League and other organizations are working with a conservative Republican member of Congress, Mike Simpson, and we're making progress. And Mike was out in the Boulder White Clouds himself last week, had a great trip, and as he talked about it, he says, you know, these places get under your skin. And as that happens, you become an advocate in ways that you didn't expect before. And I would say at the same time, some of the things he's exposed me to, some of the rural economic challenges and some of the folks in some of the constituencies that are part of his base, people are talking to each other that didn't used to talk before.
Well, there always was kind of the third leg of the stool here is the extractive industries, and I think we can never overemphasize their role in this, because it almost seems as if there was a time when, boy, if there was a pristine lake or some area that people really valued, that's where they were going to go look for their gold or some other mineral, who knows what it might be. But I also feel as if something is changing there as well, that they're realizing that isn't really appropriate anymore. Are we heading in that direction?
Well, I think the issues of extractive resource or extractive industry is evolved a great deal. I mean, this is not to say it's gone away. Right here in Boise, we have a giant cyanide heap leach gold mine that's proposed just upstream from our city here.
That's the type of thing I'm talking about. I'd be curious to hear. Yeah, okay, go ahead. Yeah.
And so, you know, we have a very active campaign to try to stop that gold mine and a remarkable amount of public support for what we're trying to do. But at the same time, I think it's important to recognize that the timber industry is not what it used to be. It's still an important part of the West, and it should be an important part of the West. I'm not looking for a West that's entirely built of, you know, yuppie trophy homes and all that other stuff. I'm okay with a well-managed, sustainable extractive industry. But at the same time, it needs to be in balance, and for a number of years it was not. But it's also, we have to recognize that there are new threats to these areas, where it used to be clear cuts in logging, and it still is in some places, but where that used to be the dominant threat, today it is recreation. And it comes in the forms of the many different motorized conveyances that have been evolving that allow people to sit on a machine and get into the woods rather than use their own 2 feet. And it's, I think, the greatest threat to wilderness values and the greatest threat to wilderness protection is the incredible growth of motorized recreation.
That's a tough one, too, because as the extractive industries are seeming to soften a bit, to want to find ways to work together for a lot of reasons. It has economic value, and in order for them to succeed properly, they really do need community support. But there is the off-road vehicle lobby is just, they sort of like, are revving their engines at the edge of the wilderness, right? Because they want to get in, you know?
Well, there's this, you know, unique spot where the roads end and the trail begins that defines what wilderness is, defines what the wild character of our neck of the woods is. And certainly it could be in West Virginia or it could be in the remote Idaho, all over the place. We have incredible wild country in this country and across this nation. It really defines who we are in many respects, and we're losing it. Fast, the wild character. And again, it used to be because of logging, but, you know, logging has changed a lot. They can now have the technology to utilize much smaller diameter timber. It doesn't have to all be about old growth cutting anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You can have the engineered wood products are using a different types of wood to sustain our construction industry and things like that. But at the same time, there are these new threats, and it really gets to, above all else, the need for us to come together in a pragmatic, common sense conservation approach and really protect these places.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't ever get easier. It only gets harder. And I think that the fact that there's a bit of a renaissance now in a pragmatic, proactive wilderness movement, I think that is really encouraging. And I'm very heartened by some of the folks that I see coming to Washington, D.C., from all different parts of the country, all different walks of life, coming together and talking to politicians of both sides of the aisle and talking about how protecting wilderness is one of the ways to truly protect the common ground of our country. And it's happening, even in one of the tougher political environments we've faced.
Now, in a place like Idaho, an interesting discussion here to talk about the evolution of this awareness. It seems to me, as an outsider looking in, although I have spent time in Idaho, that the community of Idaho is beginning to realize that there is the need for an integrated wild system for economic reasons and as well to maintain a way of life. And it all begins with the wilderness, that becomes an integrated kind of downflowing wonder. And is that emerging? The interesting thing about this is part of the Central Idaho Economic Development and Recreation Act. I believe that this 300,000 acres is part of that.
Yeah, well, the wilderness package that we're working to pass in Congress is, in fact, just that. It is a package. It includes a number of different provisions that deal with rural economic development. It deals with some motorized recreation issues that, in fact, protect some access points that the motorized community is very concerned about, as well as designating a very significant piece of wilderness, over 300,000 acres in size. And that omnibus approach, that putting a package together, is what was necessary here in Idaho, here in conservative Idaho, to create the politics of the possible. It was the way to bring some people together that were on opposite ends. And what the congressman from Idaho, Congressman Mike Simpson, did was patch together something for the various constituencies that in many cases frequently oppose wilderness. And in this bill, they get some things that they wouldn't be able to get otherwise, and have created an unusual constellation of constituencies that support this package and support wilderness. And I think that that's an important piece of the puzzle. And it's an important reason why we've been unable to pass a bill for 26 years, is it's been too easy to be split apart. It's too easy to say no. And I'll be candid, there are pieces of this bill that I don't like. I wish they weren't there. But if they weren't there, we wouldn't have the politics that have moved it forward. So I'm willing to accept some things I don't like in the very strong hope that I think we're going to get the first wilderness designation in a quarter century. And you know, it's just part of our American system. You know, to pass a wilderness bill, which is the only way to protect wilderness, you have to give a little bit to get something.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, a little bit of the added pragmatism that is coming from the conservation community that, again, this is not a perfect bill, but I think that we're beyond the place where we're going to let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
What's interesting is it almost seems as if wilderness now is a place where all these interests seem to find common ground.
Well, I think wilderness is at the forefront of this, and it makes me very encouraged that the wilderness movement is where you're seeing a lot of this common ground be developed, and it goes back to the very core of what it takes. You only can protect wilderness by passing a law, and you can only pass a law by having majority support in the U.S. Congress. And in order to do that, you have to be pretty pragmatic and you have to be pretty proactive. You have to talk to people. You know, conservationists sometimes spend a little bit too much time sitting behind their computer and looking at the email and talking amongst themselves. What this is really about is talking to the public and building the kind of support that makes it absolutely inevitable that your goals are going to be accomplished because the majority of the public supports you.
Now, if there was a message that you could send out to the wilderness community, people who are working across the country because they're all going to be coming together in Washington next week, what might that be?
I learned something many, many years ago from a good friend and mentor, Brock Evans, who is one of the early wilderness advocates in this region, very successful conservationist and still in the game, working on endangered species. But he said something to me when I was first starting out. He said, endless pressure, endlessly applied. So my message is don't give up. Keep doing it and keep your eyes on the horizon. Have a bold vision, but keep your feet on the ground and take steps in the right direction.
Well, Rick Johnson, Executive Director of the Idaho Conservation League, I want to say, first of all, thanks for lending your voice here on the Wild Side News, and then great work and good luck.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.